Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Tuesday late morning, I guess early afternoon, East Coast, but none of us are on the East Coast except for our producer, Jackson. Joining me from Seattle, Washington is the machine, Kevin Pelton.
It is definitely not afternoon here.
Yeah, this is early for Pelton. Pelton, what does your machine say about Kent State versus Indiana, 13 versus 4, preposterous time on Friday night?
I got to say, I have not yet looked at the NCAA tournament bracket at all, but I'm going to assume, you know, it's probably favorable to Indiana given the seat differential there.
Damn. Joining us from Oakland, California, Antscape's Mark J. Spears. What's up, Spears?
Man, just looking forward to seeing Texas A&M Corpus Christi today. Ross Williams, the son of Pelicans head coach Willie Green. It's an amazing story. I got to write about him in Antscape. People were, you know, want to check it out on how he went from NAIA to Division II to the NCAA tournament. It's pretty cool. I'm happy.
Nice. I'd like to invite you to come write about Kent State after they upset Indiana.
Why not?
By the way, Albany, New York.
When's the last time you guys went to the tournament?
5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
And that time they played in Sacramento. I was there. They played UCLA. They were a 15 seed. Didn't have a great chance. UCLA had 3 first round picks, including Lonzo, in their starting lineup. Playing in Albany, New York. I'm going up there. 10 o'clock, freaking 10 o'clock local start. It's ridiculous.
Why?
I don't know. Television. Don't trust television networks. Right?
it's like you're going to a finals game.
I know. No, worse. Worse. So, listen,
well, I got a lot of time to tailgate.
Yeah, it'll be wonderful in Albany. Jackson, our producer, he went to Syracuse. Yeah, you can tell me all about upstate New York in March. Anyway, we talk about the NBA. Sorry, that digression. Spears, you were in Sacramento last night, Monday night, for Bucks Kings. I watched the game. I'll yield to you here in a second, but I thought the Kings played really, really hard. Sabonis had a 23-17-15 game.
10th triple-double.
Yeah, and like prolific triple-double. Kevin Huerter made 8 out of his first 10 threes. De'Aaron Fox was good, not great, but he was okay. And I don't think the Bucks rarely came out of third gear and slapped up 133. And beat the Kings, who'd won 8 out of 9 already. But I know you've been with the Kings a lot. You've been on the Kings' success early on. What did you take away from that evening in Sac?
I think, you know, it tells you who the Kings are, right? Like, the Bucks are the bar. And now Giannis is back. Middleton's starting to play better. I thought he had a pretty good game last night.
Started he had to see 31, I think.
Yeah, he's that perhaps maybe his best game of the season, right? Or one of his more notable games. So that was like, they look like the Bucks. They look like the best team in the league at this moment. And so I think it was basically a chance for the Kings to see where they really are. And to your point, they were competitive the whole game. But ultimately, in the end, you know, the Bucks, like you said, they never really seemed in peril, although they did have to climb back a little bit. And so I think it's no question that the Kings have solidified themselves as a playoff team and perhaps even a number two seed in the West. But the question is, like, how good are they? Are they a second round team? Are they just a first round team? And the expectations have grown there, you know, before the season. I think most Kings fans would have been like, you know what, if we get the play-in, we'll be happy. Now they're like, you know, Mike Brown is talking like, hey, finals. That's crazy.
Mike has sort of shifted the narrative in the last, week or so, right?
Yeah, like before, like if you would ask Mike, couple months ago, he didn't want to talk playoffs at all. Now he's like, we could do big things, we could do great things. And so I'm curious to see like when the Kings and their magic numbers, I think around like 9 right now, something like that. Pelton probably mm-hmm. could answer that at the T. Of course, Pelton.
I'm looking at the standings.
We got a cheat code on here. but like there's this, I'd be lying if I said this is amongst the players or amongst the coaching staff, but I think amongst like ownership, maybe, you know, the front office, even the fans, there's this angst that has come from 17 years of not being in the playoffs. And as somebody said, like, you know, I think we're going to make it, but like, what if we lose like 9 in a row? I'm like, why would you guys lose like 9 in a row? And they're like, until it happens, we're not going to believe it. We're not going to get overly excited about it. And so like talking to different people up in Sacramento, to me, this is like this great story that's not getting a lot of steam at all. It's not getting any steam nationally. But when the Kings make it, there's going to be this emotional outpour in Sacramento to finally like exercise this ghost that's been haunting them for so long. I even saw Brad Miller at the game the other day, and he was like super excited. He's like, this reminds me of my old teams there. And so there's this
Brad
excitement
Miller was a good
there.
Player, man. He was a good
he
player.
He was, yeah,
he was,
really good he was, player.
He was on the last Kings playoff team, right?
Yeah.
Had to be.
So. And so, he looked like he just came out of the, from hunting. If you said,
man, I'm sure he did. Did he?
Does he ever not?
Whenever Brad wasn't on the court, he always had like a thing of chaw in his mouth. He would do interviews with it.
Yeah.
And he had, you know, camouflage hat. Oh yeah. For
oh
sure.
Yeah, yeah. No, he was definitely John Deere all day, right? Like
exactly.
Yeah, so I asked him. I said, "Hey, man,
he was a man ahead of his time, right? He was a big who could shoot like from the outside. He was ahead of his time."
Exactly. So I was like, "When we going fishing?" He's like, "Shoot, bro, I'm going hunting every day." That's right. When you ready to go hunt, let me know. I'm like, "Nah, that's where I'm good on that." But so I think it'll be interesting to see like when they qualify for the playoffs, where they are at in terms of the remaining part of the regular season. Like Mike is adamant that they're going to continue to push the foot on the gas. They're not going to let up. That they're not going to take a sigh of relief. Like you got to acknowledge the accomplishment of it. Right. But I know that city, man, it's going to be a super party when they make it.
It's also 9 games till Pelton. It's 9 games till Spears gets to take his victory lap.
I thought he was going to point that out at some point during that conversation. Yeah. Because look, I thought I was a believer in the Kings last offseason because I thought they had a really good shot at making the play-in. And it would have been interesting if they, you know, were in a situation where they had made the play-in but lost there, like how people would have treated the streak. To me, that wouldn't have ended it. But
no, it shouldn't have ended it.
Now they're in a position where they don't have to worry about that very likely. But I get the angst. Like, as a casual Mariners fan, we saw it here in Seattle last year where they were very comfortable. Spears was here when they actually clinched it. Well, we were at the Clippers game against the team from Israel, and like there were chants in the arena at an NBA game.
People were
completely
excited.
Unrelated because, and they had lost a couple in the row leading up to the clinching the walk-off homer by Cal Raleigh. And you start to wonder, like, they can't possibly blow this, can they? So I get
you
what
can certainly relate, right?
Yeah.
And when, let me ask you this, when it got exercised, did it feel lighter in town a little bit? Like,
for sure. I mean, and the timing was kind of funny with those preseason games at the Clippers and the excitement about the first NBA games at Climate Pledge Arena after that renovation was finished. So it was like a very exciting week in Seattle sports to have that combo of things going on.
Yeah. They're playing the A's too. I remember that. Yeah.
So I watched the Kings last 2 games and I came away, not that I haven't seen them all year, but I specifically watched the last 2 games. They played the Suns and the Bucks, so it's a good test. They beat the Suns in Phoenix. It was a really good performance. I talked about it on the pod the other day. I am continually blown away, not blown away, impressed with how
Brian, can I stop you real quick?
Yes, please.
Let's not forget that they beat the Knicks too.
They ended the Knicks nine game win streak.
Well, no, Charlotte ended it.
Oh, that's right.
Charlotte ended it, but like right. That was a really, I really thought that, you know, it was possible. This was something that could show what the Kings are like. They could lose those three games, and they won two of those three games, which was, I thought, pretty impressive for them.
So they generate good looks, Pelton, very easily. The number one offense in the league. But as I was watching Milwaukee last night, Milwaukee scored at will. So we know that they're a bottom five defense. And I know that Mike Brown, who's a defensive first coach, he will not have a bottom five defense during his whole tenure there. But I know that he has to try to get them to win. And their way that they win right now is to score. So before we talk about the Bucks, which I want to talk about, Pelton, defensively, it's very hard to get behind a team that ranks in the bottom five and say they can win multiple rounds of the playoffs, because if they're the two or three seed, there are, and they might get a draw that's even favorable if Ja is not returning or is compromised in some way. Like, they could get on the side of the bracket that is way less complicated than if you're on the side of Denver, and if Phoenix and Golden State end up in the 4-5. I mean, there's no doubt that Sacramento would love its chances, especially if they can win the two seed in that situation. But can we, while I want to credit them for how much they've improved, can we honestly look at this team and the way they defend and say that's a team that can win one or even two playoff series?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this last time it was on in the large sample size theater, that it's been since basically the LeBron Cavs that we've seen a team that's rated this poorly defensively in the regular season win a playoff series. And, you know, those teams were obviously a little different in terms of they had the extensive playoff track record and were, you know, largely cruising through the regular season, which is not what the Kings are doing this year. I will say, and we mentioned kind of the 2005 Sonics is a parallel for a team that came largely out of nowhere, did win a playoff series, and then gave the eventual champion Spurs a tough matchup in the second round. The other team I think that this group reminds me of a little bit is the first year of this Nuggets run, when they had just missed the playoffs the previous year, had lost out on that kind of de facto play-in game with Minnesota for the eighth seed. And then, you know, they end up, I think, the two seed that year in the bracket. Same thing broke right, where you had Houston and Golden State, where the two dominant teams had met in the conference finals the year before. They were both on the other side of the bracket, played each other in the second round. Denver in the first round played a much more experienced San Antonio team that, like a lot of the teams who might end up in their, you know, 6-7 matchups this year, you know, hadn't played at that level anymore, was kind of on the downside of their curve. And San Antonio Denver survived that one in a hard fought 7-game series, then went 7 with Portland the second round and was one win away from making the conference finals. So, you know, I think this is going to be a little bit tougher draw than that, just because there's so many teams that were considered contenders in that mix to finish 6-7 in the Western Conference. But it's the same thing, where it does set up for them to potentially make a longer run than you would expect based on the defense.
And let me this real quick. So when the Knicks played Sacramento, the Kings usually give this, have you guys seen this big chain? DPOY chain, right?
Yeah, several teams do this sort of thing.
But this is one of the few games where Mike was like, nobody gets the chain, even though they won, right? And I heard he was livid about what the Knicks did on the offensive boards, including 15 rebounds from Josh Hart, 8 of them offensively. And so even though they won the game, they beat the Knicks, they light the beam, right? Mike lit into them, like really lit into them. And to your point, Brian, like, he's pushing defense hard on these dudes, like the importance of playing great defense and showing them their stats on how they're digressing and they're not playing well defensively. And, you know, and I think he's probably starting to play players that way, where he, you know, maybe we start seeing more Davion Mitchell. But I know from what I'm hearing with Mike, like, defense and rebounding and attention to detail defensively is a really major concern for this team.
He's definitely yanked the chain, so to speak.
Yeah.
this last few weeks, I think, because he recognizes how important getting to the two seed would be. And he does smell the opportunity and he wants to get him there. But I do want to talk about the Bucks. Spears, you've seen the Bucks twice in the last few days. They lost in Golden State. Giannis didn't play in that game. And then Giannis did come back, scored 46. I mean, you tell me how it looked to you personally. I think Giannis didn't even go all the way to the floor in terms of he had more in reserve he needed to in that game. And the Bucks just to me, they are playing the best basketball in the league. And it happens to coincide on the same night where the Celtics lose in Houston and they've lost 4 of 6. Celtics are banged up right now. You know, Marcus Smart, since he's come back from his injury, hasn't quite played at the same level that we've gotten used to seeing Marcus Smart. Robert Williams is out right now with a hamstring injury. And, you know, anytime Robert Williams is out, the Celtics are less than, you know, Jaylen Brown put up 43 in that game in Houston. Jaylen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. had miserable shooting nights. I didn't see any of that game. I don't even understand how Houston won because their two guards shot something like 13 of 45. It may not be exactly that number, but it was close to it. And somehow they beat the Celtics on a night when Jaylen Brown had 43. The Celtics are not at their best right now. And I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment and just talk about a certain week in March because the Celtics, there have been times where they've looked great. But the Bucks are coming through this West Coast trip. And if Boston can't make up ground, because Boston is on a long trip right now too, you know, if they're not able to make up ground, the schedule doesn't favor them. I mean, Milwaukee is going to probably get into that one. And that one is a huge difference because you avoid being on the same side as Philly. And I think Milwaukee is just – As the season goes along, as Middleton strengthens, as Joe Ingles has strengthened coming off his injury, they look like the team to beat to me. Not by a huge amount, but in the whole league, Spears. I don't know what you feel after watching
this. No, I agree with you. Like what I saw last night in Sacramento was just dominant. Like Giannis just looked like just like really a man among boys. It was just too easy. I mean, like, think about it. He had 46 points in 34 minutes, Brian.
I'm telling you, if he had really had to, he might have been able to go to 60 without really going quiet last night. Yeah.
And I think the best thing that happened for the Bucks is like Chris Middleton finally was Chris Middleton again. 31 points, first time he's reached 30 this season. I mean, he made 5 threes. He looked like the all-star he was, right? I think that was a tremendous big sign for them, you know, that, okay, whatever, like he might have finally broken through this season at the right time, right? And even Drew Holiday didn't have a great game. And I think also Brooke Lopez showed a lot, right? In terms of sometimes I think we forget, you know what?
We almost got in a fight in the last minute of the game.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's that part too. And I'll get there, but I sometimes forget how good he is.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. They signed him to this 3-year, $55 million contract or something like that. He's at the end of it now. I was like, whoa. And when they signed him, I was like, that's aggressive for a guy that age. But it's a bargain. It's a bargain.
Had 23 points, 4 threes against Sacramento. And then I love that he had Giannis's back. And what I also like about it is your star can't fight. You don't need your star fighting, man. The dude's wrist is messed up as it is, right? And I love that he stuck up for him and made it known that this is not somebody you mess with. Because, you know, I love when I see that. So, like, they just look like if they, you know, and they didn't go deep into their bench, but their bench knows their role. Like, Jake Crowder looks like a great, you know, addition for them. But he just knows his role. Bobby Portis, you know what he could bring them offensively. So I don't see them going that deep on their bench. But, man, that starting five, man, it's just they're good, man. They're really, really good.
So what happened at the end of the game, they were dribbling it out. It was the last 15 seconds. They're up 7 or 8, whatever it was. The Bucks have the ball. Giannis has it. Trey Lyles comes over. And Giannis is dribbling it out.
Giannis also, I think the Kings thought he was trolling a little bit because he was like dribbling off slow. And then they felt like I think it was being a little sensitive.
Fair enough.
Like he dribbled in front of Lyles. And I think Mike has been on them about being tougher. In fact, he thought that the Bucks kind of beat them up in Milwaukee, so I think that's in their head too. And it was, they didn't get to light the beam, right? Like, you know, you're not gonna get to light beam, the beam.
The beam was close for the night,
but Lyles kind of surprised me with that. Like, that was a little extra.
He might get he could get suspended, or he's gonna get because he just sort of tried to steal the ball from Giannis and kind of bumped him, and I think they called a foul.
But he shoved him.
Yeah, well, he
like the he, shove was like. Well, huh?
Yeah, then he shoved him, and then Lopez came in, and he kind of – I didn't, like, study the frame by frame. He kind of went after –
Lyles grabbed him first.
Yes, Lyles grabbed Brooke first, but Brooke stepped in, say, get away from my MVP. And then I don't want to say Lyles grabbed him by the neck, but it kind of looked like he put his hands up near his head.
No, he grabbed his neck.
Okay, good. I didn't want to say that.
No, he grabbed his neck. I watched the replay a couple times. He grabbed his neck, and then Brooke grabbed his head. And they both got ejected too. And Brian and Kevin answer me this: like, can people get in trouble for hitting the scores table? Is that like going into the stands? Could there be some extra punishment there for that?
I don't know. I just know that you shouldn't be grabbing guys by the neck.
Yeah.
So he's either going to get suspended or he's going to get a slap fine for that because and then they both got ejected and Brooke kind of was really being demonstrative. You know, I know Brooke a little bit. You know, he's been around the league for 15 years. He's obviously a pretty mild-mannered guy. I mean, he can play with edge, but he's a mild-mannered guy. So to see him so fiery, and I know that's happened a couple times, but I've never really seen him that angry.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to almost take him seriously because I know how much of a kind of an easygoing guy he is, but he was really, you could see it in his eyes. He was angry. But anyway, I was just really impressed with that Bucks performance. And, I don't know what to make of the game in San Francisco, Spears. I think the Warriors are just super dangerous. And I give them no absolution for that ridiculous road record and their complete lack of interest in playing defense on the road. But when they turn it on, and they turned it on Monday night against us, this game against the Suns was over in the first quarter.
Yeah,
Clay and Steph are hitting shots. I mean, that's been the case for a decade.
Yeah.
But you know, those two wins. Granted, they were at home. Granted, one team was missing.
Probably
Durant,
you would have said a week ago
Giannis,
that they would lose them, right?
Well, I mean, Giannis didn't play and Durant didn't play, and you know, you can easily say that that's.
Well, but
a fact
Wiggins didn't play, and he's been out and. Who knows when he comes back, but Wiggins being out is a huge loss.
Right. So that would have been their primary defender on both those guys. So, Pelton, what do you think about the way the Warriors are playing right now? Obviously, the splits are the splits.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, you keep you keep waiting for it to come back to those records to come back to each other, because there's no history basically of a team being this good on, at home and this bad on the road, and it being kind of an intrinsic property of the team, as opposed to, you know, kind of something that just happened when I looked at this in January, when it was, you know, the point right after they were the best home team in the league and the worst road team in the league at the same time. The evidence was like, it's almost all the opponent 3-point shooting, which is not something you really control as a defense. And I don't think that's dramatically changed since then. So, you know, I don't think the fact that it hasn't regressed towards the mean on both sides doesn't mean it won't in the future. Like it eventually it's inevitably got to happen. I do think that the Warriors, like as we project them in the playoffs, they're probably closer to the team we've seen at home than they are on the road. You know, you guys talked about it on the Monday pod. Obviously, you need Wiggins in those settings because of, you know, as you just mentioned, that he's going to be the player defending the opponent's best scorer on the wing at this stage. That's not what you want to ask Klay Thompson to do. Jordan Poole isn't going to be doing it. Dante DiVincenzo is too small. You know, maybe Gary Payton II is back by that. They had an update yesterday on him that, you know, I think was reasonably encouraging, and he'll help their wing depth. And then Andre Iguodala being back the last couple of few games has been helpful as well. But they still need Wiggins if they're going to make a run in the playoffs. But you watch them when Klay is shooting it like he did last night, you know, Steph's still playing at a high level. The ingredients are still there, which is, you know, I think why Bontemps has been saying all along that they're his pick in the West.
And then, you know, Jamichael Green, he's been playing
good ball.
Which is good timing, because Anthony Lamb can't play any more games on this two-way.
Yeah. And
is he out of games?
He is out of games.
Yeah, he's out in Santa Cruz, you know, surfing, waiting to find out what happens. Kuminga was playing pretty good, and he's been out. So, I mean, if they add Kuminga and Payton, get Wiggins back, if they could get all that those guys back within, you know, the coming days, that I'm really curious how really good they could be going into the postseason.
So last night, Klay feeling himself, you know, I love kind of trash talk Klay. He was doing it in the game. He was getting into it with Booker in the game. I'll never forget when he talked trash during the 2016 finals. I was just caught me by surprise when he talked trash about LeBron. I love trash talk Klay. And he basically said last night, like, you're going to see on this 5-game road trip, you know, you're going to see basically. So they start on Wednesday at the Clippers. That is a game that could help determine the number 5 seed. I'm not sure you want the 5 seed, to be honest with you, because I think you know, Phoenix has lost their cushion a little bit on the 4 since Durant went out, and they play the Bucks tonight at home. We'll see how that goes. I don't think Middleton's going to play. We'll see if Giannis plays, but I still think you'd rather be the 6 than the 5, but okay, that's a potentially big game. But regardless of the seeding, that's a game against the Clippers who have been playing well, and it's the Warriors' chance to prove they can back it up with their what they talk about this road trip. Then they go to Atlanta, who has not been playing that great, just got blown out by the Wolves. Then they play in Memphis again. They just lost in Memphis a couple of days ago. Then they play in Houston, which you absolutely should win, but the Rockets beat the Celtics last night. By the way, Jabari Smith Jr. has had 3 consecutive 20-10 games. He's starting to round in. That was, I said I didn't really understand how the Rockets could win that game when Porter and Green played so poorly. The answer was because Jabari Smith played excellent, and he has been putting up numbers. But they play that game. And by the way, they do have 1 back-to-back in this series, in this set, because you don't know who's going to play. That's the Hawks-Grizzlies game. So I don't know on Saturday if everybody's going to play, but just to point that out. But so they play in Houston, and then they finish the road trip in Dallas in a game that you'd hope Luka and Kyrie would be back for. So, okay, they've played great at home. They have announced that they intend to play well on this road trip. Let's see. Let's see. If they go on this road trip and kick tail, but I mean, I just defer to the team I know they can be.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
And I talked to Steph. He turns 35 today.
Yeah, you had a story come out on Inscape about this.
And so he also, in the midst of the story, like Under Armour launches this, "We must protect this house." Remember that commercial and everything?
That was their initial saying.
Yeah.
Initial slogan.
So they've redone it with Steph and Plum and the star basketball player from University of South Carolina women. So they're like two women in the commercial, which is great.
Kelsey Plum is one of the great personalities in basketball.
Yeah.
I know Pelton agrees with me being a WNBA aficionado. Yeah.
And UW's own Kelsey Plum.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. It's my
perhaps the greatest women's basketball player ever, right? In college, in terms of stats.
I mean, yeah, she's all time leading scorer. And greatest I saw scorer. Her. She got there by scoring 57 in a game that I covered. So that was an incredible feat.
Hold on here. Breonna Stewart. University of Kentucky. I mean, Connecticut. Her college record, you know, pretty good.
She didn't need to score as many points for UConn as Kelsey did for the other Huskies.
What I asked Steph about, I was like, so when you guys you protected Chase Center, but when you leave it, he goes, "Yeah, man." he's like, we got to figure out the right mentality when we get on the road. And this is like, you know, we got the guru, Kevin Pelton here. Like, I've never seen a team be so bad on the road and so great at home like that. It's like you could flip the number.
I agree, but we know who they are. Like, we don't know who the Kings are, really, really. But we know who the Warriors are. He also said in that story, Spears, that he thinks he's got a lot more in the tank or more in the tank.
Yeah.
And I'm not in his body. I don't know how he feels, but based on what I'm seeing, I happen to agree. I do think he's got more in the tank.
And it's also different than LeBron, because I think LeBron also has to be so much more physical with every game, right? He gets hit more. He's down in the post more, where, you know, Steph, how often is he going to get hit, right? It's his dad played till he was 37.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, didn't have the technology that he has today, right? Yeah. Or Steve Kerr said something really interesting the other day. He said Steph Curry is the best conditioned athlete he's ever been around. I was like, Michael Jordan? Like, wow. Like, I wish I would have followed up on it and asked him, like, that's saying a lot. You played with Michael Jordan. But yeah, we're not seeing any Steph digress, and he's been talking to Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady about playing to 40 or past 40. And so that leads me to believe that, you know, he's trying to pass the 40 mark as well.
Is he going on any darkness retreats?
I don't know if Aisha will let him do that.
I'll tell you one thing. If Steph has 3 days off, he's not spending it in a hut. He's gonna be playing golf.
Yeah, you can't golf in a darkness retreat.
And that,
for sure. Yeah. So the thing about Steph is that his ability to get open, because he's such an incredible mover without the ball, is what has largely defined his career, other than the fact that he's one of the greatest shooters. He has to get open. I mean, Steve Kerr was a brilliant, brilliant shooter. He couldn't move like Steph. Yeah. If he could, he could get, I mean, you know, and I'm not smashing Steve. He'd say it too. He's a spot up shooter. Steph creates his own space. So yeah. If he can continue to do that, I know he's going to be able to shoot when he's 70.
Yeah.
You know, you ever see these old retired guys shoot spears? They can still knock. I mean,
when we watch Kenny Smith shoot on the show, he never misses.
Bob McAdoo, who is no longer on the bench for the Heat, but when I covered the Heat for those years, it would always have to be the new players who would come to the team because, you know, the players who'd been there for a while knew they couldn't beat them. But McAdoo would take their money.
And Horace or something?
Top 50, whatever shooting game they play. McAdoo's top 50 all-time player. Top 75, top 50. I mean, come on. And the guy was a historically incredible scorer. And he'd just sit there and make 15, 18, 20 in a row mid-range shots. He wouldn't even jump. So, you know, I know that when Steph is, what do you think Ray Allen would shoot in a three-point contest right now? Think he puts him in there?
He'd do a lot better than some of the competitors in this year's contest.
I agree. Yeah. So anyway, I agree with Steph. So anyway, before we go, Pelton, you have a piece coming out tomorrow where the machine is cranking out its draft projections. We don't talk about drafts or draft a lot on this show, frankly, because I just don't follow. I don't have the bandwidth to follow college, but you do. You follow both. Particularly, one of the things that has been discussed in the very light conversations I've had with scouts recently, I run into scouts at airports, if you want the truth, like the personnel guys. Also, a lot of the guys who do college and pro that I talk to have just been out at all the conference tournaments and stuff. They don't watch the NCAA tournament as much. I mean, they do scout it, but they really pay attention at the end of the regular season, the conference tournaments. So I'm hearing some things, but I'm certainly not an expert. But Pelton, you have something interesting, I think, at the top of your projections.
So yeah, so in the consensus projections that factor in where players are in Jonathan Givony's top 100, obviously Victor Wembanyama is number one in those projections, but number two is not Scoot, who's been kind of the presumed number two all season long and certainly solidified that position in the matchups against Wembanyama when his team came over to play G League Ignite back in October. But since then, Scoot Henderson has not kind of played at that same level for Ignite during their regular season, and then also the tournament competition that they have in November and December. And the number two prospect for me now, even factoring in that consensus rank, is Brandon Miller from Alabama. And, you know, Givony has started talking about that, you know, this is now a conversation among scouts. Is Scoot still the number two guy, or has Brandon Miller surpassed him?
Yeah, I talked to a veteran executive just in the last week, and he told me that he currently has Brandon Miller number two on his board. So it is a thing. Board's not finalized. Draft isn't for months, but Spears, I've heard it, and Pelton's rankings are reflecting it.
And I'm hearing mixed things on it in terms of Scoot and Brandon Miller. Obviously Brandon Miller has a major situation that could play a role. But
I'm not passing judgment on all that. I don't know. Yeah, yeah. You know, just from a player evaluation.
But one team president told me that, you know, he's we don't have to get deep into that. That's a whole nother ball game.
It is a factor. It will be a factor. It is a factor in the draft process, but that's not what's spitting out of Pelton's.
Yeah. But Scoot has like about 10 days of playing left with the G League Ignite. His final game is a week from Saturday in LA against the Lakers G League team. And then I think it's off to Atlanta to start getting ready. So this is his last kind of stretch to really show everybody like why he should, like the last time when we saw him at NBA All-Star Weekend, he still was talking about believing that he could be number one. Now this is, the conversation's even changing more. And so he's a really, really confident kid. He believes he should be number one. I wonder how this conversation is changing his mind process as well. So knowing how competitive he is, I wouldn't be surprised to see him, you know, he has like 5 games left, really try to pick it up. And because this is it for him. This is it until the workouts begin. But I mean, look, what it says to me is these 3 players are great, man. I mean, all 3 of them are really good. And which bodes well for, you know, you got to keep an eye on the Thompson twins, right? At Overtime Elite. Like, this is starting to be, at least in the top 10, I think, a pretty good draft.
Yeah. So I know Gavoni was pretty impressed with the Overtime Elite. He went to the, I don't want to speak for him, he was at the Overtime Elite finals, but I know he was impressed with that. I don't know. I can't give an honest assessment of Scoot Henderson's game versus Brandon Miller's game. I have not studied them. I do know that if all else is equal, NBA players are going to default to the bigger player. That's a historic thing. It by the way, it's led to mistakes. Okay. Yeah. It's not an infallible thing, but I do know that that is the thing. And I know that Brandon Miller's size is extremely attractive versus Scoot, who is a powerhouse, but is smaller by several, but what is he listed? 6'2", I think.
Yeah. And then another thing, Brian, is a general manager told me that in today's NBA, shooting guards that can really score are like deemed of really high value, more so than any other position.
Well, anybody who is 6'2" needs to be able to shoot.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are players who are 6'2" who aren't exceptional shooters who can be good, but really, in today's day and age, you really, really got to be a great shooter at that size.
And I think that's one of the differences we've seen over this G League season is compared to what we saw from Scoot in those 2 exhibitions against Wembanyama's team, is he was really shooting the ball quite well at that point. He's at 27% on 3s during the G League regular season, which is one reason his efficiency just hasn't been there. Whereas Brandon Miller is, you know, a very accurate shooter, and at his size, I mean, that's again kind of the prototypical wing combo in the NBA. I don't quite know who to compare him to, because I feel like some of the other guys that have had his size and shooting ability have kind of relied a little bit more on their size. You think of even, you know, Brandon Ingram, younger in his career, you know, he almost plays kind of a bully ball style, which is odd for Brandon Ingram, given that he's all so skinny like Miller is. But Miller, it's much more facing the basket. I'd say maybe Paul George is kind of where his game trends towards, if I had to pick a comp for him.
Yeah. You know, Wembanyama hasn't shot the, now this is somebody I have studied. Wembanyama hasn't shot the 3 well since Vegas either. He's under 30. I haven't checked it most recently, but he's been under 30%. But
is that an NBA 3 or is that an international 3?
No, international 3. Yeah. It's, you know, the style that they play over there is a lot different. I think he will shoot the 3 okay. I don't think he's ever going to be, well, I shouldn't project, but he's not a brilliant shooter. In Vegas, he shot the ball incredibly and people's mouth dropped open. He does score very efficiently, and he leads that league in points, rebounds, blocks, second and free throw attempts, stuff like that. He's going to be the MVP of the league, but he does not, that is not the, that what you saw in Vegas has not been the Wembanyama that has been the rest of the season in terms of shooting. And the same, I guess, for Scoot, because his numbers are down under 30%. But I remember saying I didn't think LaMelo Ball would ever be an effective shooter because I was really turned off by his shooting numbers, and he has really turned himself into a dangerous 3-point shooter. So
just, you got to remember how young these guys are.
Oh, yeah.
And how much better the teaching is going to be once they get to this level.
I will say this, like, Scoot plays against, you know, men, and it's easier, yeah. Probably it's going to be harder on him. I mean, he's getting paid. I don't know how much Brandon Miller's NIL deals are, but you know, one of the things that when you play in the Ignite, your situation is going to be different. Before this pod started, our producer Jackson was saying, you know, if Scoot was playing for Kansas right now, I don't remember he was considering, but you know, he may have a different, you know, that might have a factor. But the Ignite guys, you know, in its infancy, the Ignite program has turned out some positive stuff. So he picked it for a reason.
Yeah.
So, all right. Thank you, Mr. Spears. Thank you, Mr. Pelton. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Everybody, thanks for listening to Hoop Collective. We'll talk to you guys with the Tims on Friday. Hey,
can I add something real quick?
Yes, sir.
A friend of mine told me they're a big fan of your podcast. Just wanted to give them a shout out. Jazz aficionado Branford Marsalis told me he's an avid listener and respects your work, man.
Not just Utah Jazz, actual Jazz. Yeah. Maybe he likes the Utah Jazz too.
No, he's a New Orleans Pelicans fan. He used to like the New Orleans Jazz. But Branford told me to give you a shout out, and he said he enjoys the podcast. He's, I don't know if he's as you know, as big a fan as McMahon's craziness, but he said he really enjoys you.
Well, none of us are. None of us are. Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Marsalis. It's always great to hear from someone who is elite in their craft, and he certainly is. Yes. So, Spears, you got to go to Jazz Fest.
Let's go.
It happens during the playoffs. I don't know if the Pelicans are going to make it to Jazz Fest.
If they're there and we're in town, we're going.
All right. Thank you, guys. Take care.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.